This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
In the last year, 2 weeks ago, we discussed the relationship between quality and quantity, and how that a quality which is unable to generate quantity is sterile quality. It is one of the qualities of quality, it is one of the properties of quality, if it's in fact a healthy and a dynamic quality, to be able to generate quantity. It's not very well to say it's not the quantity that counts, it's the quality. That's true, but the quantity is a reflection of what kind of quality it is. And a quality which is unable to generate quantity is a sterile quality. Might be very good, but it's sterile. And we learned the Medrash, you remember, of the man who finds the beautiful tree and doesn't know what bracha to give the tree, and eventually he says, Kol anatiyos ha'imdos mimech, all the little plants that you generate, yiyu kamoseich. My blessing is that you should generate many, many more trees of the same kind of quality as yourself. That's the ultimate in bracha, to generate quantity out of that quality. Where people sometimes lose their perspective a little bit is when they see quantity as an end in itself. When they're willing to achieve quantity and sacrifice quality. When quantity becomes valuable irrespective of quality. That's not so. When quantity is not a function of bracha, when quantity is not a function of blessing, then the quantity is meaningless. It's only when there is inherently something good and something valuable, and that which is good and valuable grows and develops and multiplies and makes more of its own kind, that's a siman brocha. That's a sign that the essence, the quality, is in fact a generative quality and not a sterile quality. And its generative ability is part of that quality. This evening we're going to look at the conditions for brocha. How does one ensure that quality generates quantity? What does there need to be? We see that quality alone is not enough. There can be sterile quality and there can be generative quality. The fact that you have something of quality does not mean necessarily that there's going to be bracha. You can have a very fine tree. That is not a guarantee that it is going to produce other fine trees. You can start off with a very high quality seed from a very fine genetic line. Yet when you plant it, either nothing comes up at all, or what does develop is not what you expected to develop. Something different develops. That can be too. So there is no guarantee from quality alone that quantity is going to be developed. There is no guarantee that where there is essence, that there is also going to be brocha. There are different conditions altogether for the application of brocha, for the existence of brocha, for the existence of blessings. And this evening we're going to analyze the fundamental condition for brocha. You remember the lovely story of Elisha who visits a widow who has cried out to her saying, Avdecho ishi meis, she says, my husband, your servant, has died. Ve'ato, your daughter, and you know, ki avdecho ha-yoreis Hashem, that your servant, my husband, was a yorei shemayim, he was a very God-fearing man. V'hanoshe bo lokachas eshnei yolodai leila avodim. And his creditors have come to take my two children as slaves. That's all I've got to give. There's nothing else in the house. Vayemer Eyeha Elisha. And Elisha said to her, Ma'eh Selach. What can I do for you? I've got nothing in the house. If there's taka nothing, there's nothing I can do for you. Ma'eh Shlach Babos. What do you have? You must have something. Already indicating that if there's no essence, there cannot be bracha. So we see one of the conditions for bracha already. There's got to be a seed. Something has to be there. Otherwise, Ma'eh Selach, what can I do for you? There's nothing. Patomir, she says, Ein l'shifchos chokol babayis ki mosuch shomin. All I've got is a little bottle of oil. That's the only thing I possess. I have nothing else in the house. Vayomir, he says, L'chi shari loch keilim min hachutz. If you've got oil, I can help you. Even if it's only a little bit of oil. But go and borrow kelim, go and borrow utensils, vessels, from outside. Meis kol shcheinoich, from all your neighbors. Kelim reikim, empty vessels. Al tamiti. Don't stint on them. As many as you can find. Bring as many kelim as you can find. uvos, and then you shall come, v'sogart hadeles ba'adeich uviad b'naich, and you shall close the door for your own sake and the sake of your children, v'yotzakt al kol hakelim ho'ele, and you shall pour from your little bottle of oil onto all these kelim, v'hamolei tasi, and as a vessel becomes full, push it aside and bring the next vessel and just keep on pouring. Notice he says close the door when you do this. Nowadays when people do miracles, they like everybody to know about it. And they tell the Hasidim, and they tell everybody, they tell them before they're going to do miracles, they tell them after they've done miracles, they make quite sure that there's good publicity for miracles. You see, that's not required. But when Nisim are done, it's kept quiet, close the door, nobody needs to know. This is not for you. And had it not been revealed in Tanakh, we would never have known the story. Elisha never told anybody, she never told anybody, her children never told anybody. There's a certain tznius to Nisim as well, to miracles as well. No need to publicize them. Atelech meitoy, and she went from him. Batiskor adeles ba'ado v'ad boneo, and she carried out his instructions and closed the door for her own sake and the sake of her children. Heim magishi me'leho v'him etzokes. They, the children, brought the kelim, and she poured. Vayehi kimelois ha'kelim, and as she filled, it was as she filled the kelim, batomer el beno, and she said to her son, hagisho elai od keli, bring me the next vessel. Vayemer eleho ein od keli. And he said to her, there aren't any other vessels. Vayam eid ha'shomen, and the oil stopped pouring. So here we see, very clearly, the fundamental requirements of a fabrocha. There has to be something to start with. There has to be quality. The oil which is going to be produced through this miracle is not going to be of a better quality than the oil which she started with. He's not going to make gold out of oil. All he can do is ribui. He can make a lot of oil out of a little oil. That's brocha. You start with a little seed and you can reap an entire harvest. That's brocha. And the more there is of it, the more the greater the brocha. The more the quantity resembles the quality, the greater the brocha. But there's no anticipation that the quantity is going to be greater than the quality. In fact, we're told that the way she really manages to pay all her debts with this oil, how much oil was it after all? It was kelim, 100 kelim, 1,000 kelim, how much was it? Is that enough to pay her debts and still to live on? He tells her afterwards, go and sell it. Michri is hashemen, v'shalmi is nishech. Go and sell the oil and you will be able to pay your creditors. For the rest of your lives, you and your children can live on the rest. What happened? How can that be? That's also a miracle. So Chazal tells us, and Rashi brings it, there was a further miracle. That was nice. That the price went up. Just at the time that she gathered all this oil together, there was a shortage of oil. The price shot up. She sold into the tight market, and she did very well. So what happened? There was ribui. What kind of ribui? There were two levels of ribui. There were two levels of multiplication, of generation. A great deal of oil was generated from a little bit, and it fetched a great price. But the oil didn't change to gold. The oil didn't become anything more precious. The oil remained oil. It can't be more than it starts with. It can be as good as it starts with. The price can go up. Outside conditions can change. There can be more of it. But there has to be the essence with which to start. There can only be brocha if there's a seed. There can only be brocha if there's essence with which to begin. The second condition we see over here quite clearly is the existence of kelim. There have to be utensils. Brocha cannot take place unless there is that in which to contain the brocha. Brocha needs to be contained by a container. And the absence of a container makes impossible the existence of brocha. They have to be both, the content and the container. And it's not that the role of the container is merely to contain the brocha, and that if there isn't a container, the brocha will go to waste. That's not what it means. If there isn't a container, there can be no brocha. Why did the oil stop when there were no more containers? Let it carry on and on and on. She'll find already, but it won't take very long. No, if it would have stopped for a moment, it couldn't come back. That was it. The moment there were no containers, it stopped. And the implication is that it stopped before the last container was full. Because she says to her son, bring me more, kelim. And he says to her, "Ein oid keli, they are not anymore." Bayamid Hashomim. And immediately the sun said, "There are no more kelim." The oil stopped. If you don't have the kelim, the broche will stop. There cannot be broche if there's an absence of kelim. That seems to be what it says. And in fact, the Radak brings a Targum to Sefta, which seems to say that quite clearly. The Targum to Sefta tells us that she brought even broken kelim, and they put them, miraculously they were joined together. That could happen as well, but there needs to be a kli. And finally, Omar bro les oid mana, the sun said, there are no more kelim, the shomer amudu de mishcha, and the pillar of oil that was being poured heard that, ufosak, and it stopped. Again in the Radak we see clearly that the stopping of the oil was before the last kli was full. It wasn't the fullness of the last kli that caused the stoppage of the pouring. What caused the stoppage of the pouring was the admission that there are no more kelim. If you don't have the kelim, there cannot be bracha. So two conditions for bracha are now required. There must be essence, there must be a kli. The question is, what is the relationship between these two? Is it enough to have the two? We know that that's not so. You can try it, go home, and take a seed, a corn of wheat, an ear of wheat, and put it in a kli, and it won't fill up. It's true that if you take a handful of popcorn and you put it in the microwave, it will fill up, but that's not because of nisim, that's not because of brocha, that's purely scientific. But if you don't put it into the microwave, it won't fill up. There won't be any more. That's it. So we see it's not sufficient to have a seed and to have a kli. There's another element also which needs to exist for bracha to take place. And that element we need to discover. The Medrash says, in today's Sedra, on the Birkas Kohanim, Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta Omar, Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta said, Godol Sholem, Sholem, peace is very great. She'ein kli mekabe brocha, Elo Sholem. There is no kli that can receive brocha other than Sholem. That is the kli. So again we see this principle, that without a kli there cannot be brocha. But here we see a new idea which needs to be analyzed. That there is only one kli capable of receiving bracha, and that's Sholem. Has to be Sholem. Shenema, as it says, Hashem Yevorech Esamoy Vasholem. After Birkas Kohanim, also in Birkas Kohanim, Achar Kol Brachos, after all the brachos that were given, Yevorechecho Hashem V'yishmerecho, Yisro Hashem Paspono Ve'lecho V'chunecho, all the wonderful brachos. At the end, Siyamon b'sholem. At the end there has to be sholem. V'yosem l'cho sholem. Without that ending, the rest becomes meaningless. Because the bracha would be dissipated. There cannot be bracha if there's not sholem. Leimah to teach, she'ein ha'brochus mo'ilus klum. Elohim kein sholem imoyim. That bracha doesn't help one iota if there isn't sholem. Doesn't help. You know, people spend a lot of money going to get brochas from Rabbeim and from Gedolim. They travel overseas, they go to get a brocha. But they need to learn this medrash first. Doesn't help if there's no sholem. First fix the sholem, there's got to be a kli first. If there's sholem, then you can get a brocha. If a husband and wife aren't getting on well together, it doesn't help going for brochas. If a person's not getting on, if a person's a baal machlekes, it doesn't help going for brochas. The condition for a brocha to take effect is, first and foremost, there must be a kli. What is the kli? The kli is sholem. No kli, no bracha. No utensil, no blessing. No sholem, no bracha. And this same theme, there's a gemara at the end of Uksin, which says the same in a slightly different context. Kesherotza HaKadosh Baruch Hu lo says Torah liYisrael, when the Rebbe Yisrael wanted to give Torah to the Yidden, lo motza HaKadosh Baruch Hu kli machzik bracha, elo hasholem. The Rebbe Yisrael could find no utensil capable of holding the required bracha, other than sholem. Sholem needed to be there. What is sholem? Sholem doesn't just mean the absence of conflict. That's not sholem. Sholem is something much deeper than that. And as the Medrash goes on extolling the virtues of sholem in the most exalted terms, and among them the Medrash says, Godel ha-sholem, sholem is great, she-shemoy-shomokim kori sholem, because sholem is one of Hashem's names. That's the reason that when one's in the bathroom, one cannot say shalom. When one goes to the mikveh before Yom Tov, you can't say shalom aleichem to your friend there, because shalom is Hashem's name. There is kedusha to the word shalom. Shalom is not a simple thing. If shalom was merely the absence of conflict, these kind of things wouldn't be said. The wonderful thing is about shalom, that shalom is, the Midrash just goes on and on and on about shalom. Beautiful Midrashim. Godol HaShalom Shedisun Schara Torah Rava Mitzvahs. You get shalom as a reward from the Torah and Mitzvahs. Godol HaShalom Shedisun Lo'ayavei Torah. People who love Torah get shalom. And so it goes on and on. Godol HaShalom Shedisun Lo'ayim Dei Torah. Godol HaShalom Shedisun Lo'ayisei Tzedokah. People who give Tzedokah, people who do righteous deeds, get shalom. It's a wonderful thing. It's one of the most precious gifts the Ribbono Shel Olam has. In fact, in the beginning of the recent Sedra, in the Chukosai, right in the beginning of the Sedra starts off, if you will listen to the laws of the Torah, then I will give you all sorts of wonderful bracha. You'll have rains in the right time, and the fields will give forth their produce, and there will be wealth. The Nasati Shalom Boretz. And Rashi brings right over there, so that you should know that without Shalom, all those brachas are meaningless. It doesn't help having all the wonderful goodness, you to have all the wealth, and to have all the health. It doesn't help if there's no Shalom. There must be Shalom as well. But shalom doesn't just mean the absence of conflict. Shalom comes from the word shalem. Shalem means completion, perfection. Different thing altogether. What does that completion and perfection mean? The time the two people can get on with each other without conflict, truly get on, is when they complement one another. When each one recognizes in the other qualities which he lacks. And the two together, through their interrelationship, are able to utilize the qualities together. And shalom is then established. Then you have shalemus. I always give the example. If you ask any of the older people who are not married, who've never been married, and you say, what are you looking for? What's the problem? So they're not looking for much. They're not looking for. You say, tell me, what are you looking for? No, she doesn't have to be that beautiful. So you say, well, how beautiful. No, it doesn't matter. That's not so important. So you give them a few examples of some lovely girls. No, she's got to be more attractive than that. Eventually you come to Princess Diana. That's all I need. Nothing more than that. That's okay. Good, fine. Wealthy? No, it doesn't have to be that wealthy. You mention a few names. Is that okay? No, he wants a bit better than that. You come back again to Princess Diana. That's okay. Yeah, that's all he wants. He's not asking a lot. And so he goes on, and you go to a girl who you think is a perfect shidduch for you, and you go through the same questions, and you say, what are you looking for? You know, time's getting on, it's time to settle down. No, she's also not looking for Mr. Perfect. And you describe, and until you get to the description of Prince Charles, except for the looks, that's what she wants. That's what she wants. What's happened? Then you understand why they're both still struggling. They're looking for Mr. and Mrs. Perfect. Number one, I always tell them is, but they don't believe me, that there isn't such a thing as Mr. and Mrs. Perfect. That's number one. Even ask Charles and Diana. They'll also tell you there's no such thing as Mr. and Mrs. Perfect. Number two, if there was a Mr. and Mrs. Perfect, you're the last person they would want to marry. It's the next thing you've got to know. And number three, the important thing in a marriage is that Mr. Imperfect and Mrs. Imperfect together can create a Mr. and Mrs. Perfect. That's what has to be. That the chisroinus that the one has, that the inadequacies that the one has, the other one has strength to compensate, and vice versa. That the two are able to form a unit which together has a perfection. And that's why you'll also always hear people say, what did he see in her? Such a wonderful fellow. He's got yichus, and he's got money, and he's got looks. He could have married anybody. Look what he ends up with. And you hear another story with another chasna. What did she see in him? She's got money and she's got yichus and she's got good looks. She's got everything. What did she see in him? The answer is, the more perfect the one is, the less he needs in the other. That's takasa. You'll very often find that the ones who've got the brains and the yichus and the money and everything, they just need, they're missing one or two factors, and it doesn't matter. That's all they need in the other party. And what's important is not in what did he see in her and what did she see in him. What's important is the two together. What's missing? There's nothing missing in the two together. That's a good shidduch. They've got it all. That's shalom. When two people are able to interrelate with one another in a way that they are utilizing each other's strengths and not amplifying each other's weaknesses, then you've got shalom. Now you remember last time, 2 weeks ago, I explained to you the beautiful idea that Rabbi Yosef ben Soloveitchik develops, that the Ribbono Shel'olam created the world in such a way that the essence of Brocha is expressed in the very first brochas given in the Torah, Pru Uravu. That's where we see multiplication. That's the first time that we see generation. The brocha is to humanity, have children, generate large numbers of people. That's part of the brocha. And we saw that in the Midrash as well. Make more trees just like you. But what does a tree need in order to make more trees just like it? There needs to be cross-pollination. There needs to be fertilization. What does a man need in order to make more people just like him? He needs a woman. What does a woman need? She needs a man. There needs to be a male-female relationship in order for there to be the essence of bracha as we defined it in the last year 2 weeks ago. Only through a male-female relationship can bracha develop. And we discussed that concept further last time, and we said that doesn't mean literally male and female. That means a male-female type relationship in all sorts of situations. Teacher and student, two chavruses, two colleagues in business, customer and supplier, lawyer and client, whatever you want. A situation of brocha can only be created where there are two, and the two are interrelating in a give and take situation. You can take it in any area of life, it's exactly the same. I gave you the example of the Rebbe who gives a shir. While he's giving the shir, he is the teacher. He is the male. He's thinking, he's giving. All of a sudden somebody in the audience gets up and asks a question which makes him think, who's become the male, who's become the female? Now the student has become the male and the Rebbe has become the female. And then he gives his answer, and once again he is male and the student is female. And so it goes on. We're not talking about a male and a female in the literal sense. We're talking about a male-female relationship. As the Sifrei Kabbalah call it over and over again, the Duchro and the Nukvo. In everything that is Duchro, there is the male element and there is the female element. And the interrelationship between the two create the regenerative ability, the creative ability, the ability to make new things. You need male and female. And it's in every area you've got in business. A man wants to become wealthy. What do? So let's say he starts manufacturing. So he makes whatever he makes, furniture, he makes tables and he makes chairs. Good. So there's already been productivity. Where's male and female? He's the male. And the raw material, the wood, is the female. So he's got tables and chairs now. But he can't eat tables and chairs. He needs money. So what does he need now? He needs a customer. The customer comes and he has to promote his article. He has to sell his article. It's a male-female relationship. He's got to get the customer to receive the article. Then in return for that, there is money. The money gets invested back in the business. More furniture is made. More furniture is sold. More money is made. Generation takes place. There's a male-female relationship. But if you only had one man in the economy, can't be brocha. Can't make money from one man. There needs to be at least two interrelating to one another. A lawyer wants to make a living. So he studies. What's he studying for? To be able to give advice to people. Fine, so now he's got his exams, he's passed, he's a wonderful lawyer, he got straight A's all the way through, sets himself up in an office, and he waits until the woman comes in. The woman might be a man, it doesn't make any difference. But a client has to come in. Somebody to whom he can give. Who will receive and appreciate what he's receiving and will want to pay him for what he's receiving. Then he can start living. One person on his own can't. And then they show him. When a man is productive and his productivity is being received well and being responded to, then they show him. I always tell the lawyers that I believe that they have a rough time when everybody else is doing well and they have a good time when everybody else is doing badly. And they always assure me it's not so, but I've monitored that it is so. Why? Very simply. When the businessmen are busy and are productive, they're making and they're selling and they're being paid, nobody's got time for lawyers. You can make much more by putting more effort into your business than by fighting a court case. So you write it off and you forget about it, and the poor lawyer sits without panos. When it comes bad times, and it doesn't help, there isn't enough. It doesn't help putting more effort into the business. You can't sell what you've got. Now you start, everybody who doesn't pay you, you go to the lawyer and you sue, you spend your time that way rather. When there is productivity, there is shalom. When there is non-productivity, there is not shalom. When there's give and take, there's shalom. When there's mutual respect, where there's complimenting, where people understand and appreciate, where there's not sarusayan, where there's not a small-mindedness. In a male-female relationship, there's not small-mindedness. In the basic male-female relationship, there's an understanding that the man has to give what the woman can't get any other way, and that the woman has to give and to receive that which the man cannot have received any other way. There's not sarusayim, there's love and there's shalom. And that has to permeate the entire male-female relationship, not only in the home, but in the entire universe. An understanding that there has to be give and take. And the more give and take there is, the more shalom there is, and the more prosperity there is, and the more wealth there is, and the more happiness there is. It's so simple. The more there's give, the more there's take. Provided there's hakoros hatoif. Provided there's appreciation of what you're getting. If you're trying to take without giving back, if you want to take, you want the furniture, but you're not willing to pay your account, then of course there can't be shalom. But provided you appreciate and value what you're receiving, and the supplier appreciates and values the fact that you are receiving, then there's a relationship of shalom and there's prosperity. And that's why the Rebbeinu Shalom says that of all the things, Godel HaSholim She'en Kli Mekabel Brocha El HaSholim, there is no utensil that can accept Brocha other than Sholim. Sholim is a precondition for Brocha. Sholim means the correct interrelationship between the male and female elements of society, the male and female elements of personality, the male and female elements of economy. If there is the correct, if there is Shleimus, if there is the correct interrelationship between the two, then there can be Brocha. Then there can be lots, and the more there is, one knows how to handle it. It all becomes productive, not counterproductive. But the moment there is not showing, the moment there is tzarus ayin, narrowness, resentment, bitterness, there's a desire to take rather than to give, then the whole thing collapses. And there is no ability for sholim, for brocha to be contained. And there cannot be brocha. And so we see from this chazal that sholim is the essential kli, and sholim is a dynamic midah. Sholim is not a static midah. Sholim is not a kli like the kli in Melochim that we learned with Elisha. The kli in Melochim is static, it's just a utensil. When the kelim were finished, the brocha stopped. Sholim, which is the most fundamental of all kelim, the precondition for all brocha, that's a dynamic kli. That's a kli which means, that is not just a kli. Sholim is a relationship between essence and utensil. What is male-female? What is husband-wife? The wife is the kli. The woman is the kli. And the husband has the essence. And if the dynamics of the relationship between husband and wife are correct, she is mekabelis, his essence, she receives his essence, and then from that brocha can be generated. A new generation can be established. She is the kli, and he is the essence, and shalom, shleimus means the correct interrelationship between kli and essence. And so when the Medrash talks about shalom being the kli, the vessel for brocha, what the Medrash means is shalom is the atmosphere that has to exist between essence and utensil in order for brocha to take place. Shalom includes everything. Shalom means there is essence. Shalom means there is a kli, there is a utensil. And shalom means the two are interrelating properly as male and female should interrelate, backwards and forwards. And by the way, in marriage too, the male, female is not always female, the male is not always male. Sometimes she is the essence and he is the mekabel. In a very simple, basic fundamental area, when he comes home from work and he's got the money and he's able to give her money with which to buy her housekeeping and to do whatever she needs, he is the giver, she is the kli, she receives, and he feels good. All of a sudden his earning of a living is no longer a self-centered thing, it now becomes an act of chesed. He's able to support somebody else with it. In fact, other people too, with that money, you'll support the children as well, you'll get food for the children and clothing for the children, and so his work bringing home the money ceases to be a self-centered thing, it now becomes brocha. Now there's a kli, there's somebody to accept, to come home and to be able to give the money over to somebody and say, this is for you to buy the needs of the home. That's an act of chesed, that's wonderful, that's an act of brocha. And when she receives it, she's the kli. And then after that, he sits down at the table and she gives him dinner. Who's the kli? Who's mekabel? Now she becomes the essence. She's produced the food. She's cooked the meal. She's served it up and prepared everything and presents it to him. And he receives it. And what happens if when he brings the money home, she looks at him and says, is that all you can produce this month? What happens? No shalom. No shalom. No brocha. What happens if when she gives him the dinner, he sits down and doesn't say thank you and doesn't express appreciation and doesn't compliment her. No sholem. No sholem, no bracha. There has to be sholem. Sholem is the correct interrelationship between giver and receiver, between essence and kli, between essence and utensil, between the teichen, the content, and the external kli which holds that content. There has to be a dynamic relationship between the two in order to establish the bracha. But we can take that a step further. Where do you start? Do we start with the essence, or do you start with the kli? The truth is, you need them both. That we've said clearly, you need them both. But we see with, in the case of Elisha, the kelim had to be prepared. First go and get the kelim, then I can start with the oil. That has to be the kelim, the kli has to be there first. We see this in a number of different areas. For example, what is sholem? Sholem is sholem something you learn from the Torah? No, not only from the Torah. Sholem is something that they can be among goyim as well. Can also live peacefully. Male and female can interrelate properly even if they're not Jewish. The bracha of Pru Revu that was given to Adam had nothing to do with Yiddishkeit. It was given to universal man. So the concept of bracha and sholem containing that bracha is not essential to Torah. That's something wider, that's something more universal. Sholem is derech eretz. It's the basic fundamentals of people knowing how to relate to one another. Of knowing how to give and knowing how to receive. Knowing how to want to be productive and knowing how to value and appreciate productivity. That's the basics of interpersonal relationships. If people would know those two things, then there would be little place in our world for economists. There would be little place in our world for psychologists and for psychiatrists. There would be little place in the world for all sorts of people, because things would just go very smoothly. If people really appreciated the value of being productive and appreciated the value, appreciate the need to be productive and the value in productivity, then the world would look after itself. That's all you need. There would be sholem. And once there's sholem, there would be bracha and everything else would follow. Sholem is the fundamentals of derech eretz. Sholem is plain and simple interpersonal interrelationship, correct interpersonal behavior. And it's Rabbi Yeruchim that points out that derech eretz kodma l'toira, that which Chazal tell us, that derech eretz came before the Torah, that's not just a chronological statement. Before the Torah there was derech eretz. That tells us something much more fundamental than that. That tells us that derech eretz kodma l'toira, that out of derech eretz, Torah is developed and grows. Torah doesn't start in a barren land. Torah doesn't start from nothing. You can't take a nobody and start teaching him Torah. He has to have derech eretz first, and then you take his derech eretz and you form that into Torah. But if there is no derech eretz, there cannot be Torah. Main derech eretz and Torah, main Torah and derech eretz. They need to be the two. Torah is developed out of derech eretz, says Yeruchim. Rabbi Yeruchim, it's not that you've got derech eretz first, and now that you've got derech eretz, good, you can start a new life, Torah. Doesn't work that way at all. This is one of the very big problems we face in the Baal Tshuva movement today. But the Baal Tshuva movement takes South Africa as a perfect example, where an ordinary person growing up in an ordinary home in South Africa learns derech eretz at home. Used to learn, last generation, used to learn derech eretz at home. We learned derech eretz from our parents. We're not teaching it to our children, but that's another pasha. From our parents, we learned derech eretz. Frum or not frum, makes no difference. Religious, not religious, we learned derech eretz. We learned derech eretz from our teachers, especially if we didn't go to Jewish day school. Then we learned derech eretz as well. They insisted on a certain kind of behavior. They insisted on derech eretz. They insisted on politeness. Had to be. Then we become bali tshuva. We become frum. What's the first thing we're told? Just forget everything else you learned. You went to a non-Jewish school, it's all goyish. Just forget it. It's nothing, it's unimportant. We're starting now with Torah. You've got to start thinking like a Jew, not like a non-Jew. Start afresh. That's missing the whole point. The whole point is to take the positive that there is in the past. Sure, there are many things one has to unlearn. There are many philosophies, many outlooks, many value systems that one has to unlearn. But don't throw it all out. To throw the precious gold out with all the other garbage? The Derech Eretz is the essence from which the Torah will be developed. Throw the Derech Eretz out and there cannot be Torah. And that's what's happened. And so we've developed a generation of Frum Balei Tshuva, not generalizing, of course one mustn't generalize, there are a lot of exceptions to it, but we have a major problem, not only here but throughout the world, we have it here to a large extent too. We have a generation of Frum Balei Tshuva who have lost their Derech Eretz. And we think that it's just a Derech Eretz problem. It's not just a Derech Eretz problem. If they've lost their Derech Eretz, then you can be sure what they have newly acquired is not Torah. It's religion. It's a bit of a mixture. It's a sort of a Judeo-Christian kind of religion that's put together somehow. But it's not Torah. Because Torah has to be founded on Derech Eretz. Torah has to be developed out of Derech Eretz. Im ein Derech Eretz, ein Torah. If there isn't Derech Eretz, there isn't Torah. Cannot be Torah. That is a precondition. You say, but Derech Eretz, that's goyish, that's nothing, it's formed. Does it matter? I heard that a colleague of mine, I can't believe it, but I was told that a colleague of mine, it wasn't told who, but I've been through all my colleagues and I can't think of anybody who would say such a thing. But I was told that a colleague of mine said, to eat with table manners, that's goyish. Where does it say in the Torah, thou shalt eat with table manners? It's not Jewish. There's no basis for that. To dress nicely, to look good, there's no basis for that. Where does it say that thou shalt wear a tie? It's goyish. It's not. It's Derech Eretz. Good. It's form. You can tell it's just form. It's a formality. Meaningless. That's where we make the mistake. Formality is not meaningless. It's true Derech Eretz is a formality. But out of that Derech Eretz we develop Torah. Derech Eretz Kodma LaTorah. That's the basis out of which we build our Torah. And if there isn't that formality, there cannot be Torah. And you'd ask, why? What's the one got to do with the other? What's the wearing a tie got to do with Torah? What's the table manners got to do with Torah? What's the saying please and thank you and good morning got to do with Torah? And what's the kli got to do with the bracha? Isn't that only a formality? The kli can't, if he can do a miracle already, he can make oil pour and pour. What does he really need the kli kelim for? Let it pour, she'll find kelim. Let it go on and on and on like an oil well. It goes and goes and goes, whether there's a kli or there isn't a kli. But that's not bracha. That's diminishing. As you take oil out of the oil well, there's less and less oil in the oil well. Bracha means that as you take it out, there is no diminishment. But for that, you need a kli. Only a kli? It's external? It's unimportant? It's formality? Yes. But formality, the kli, the external, is a precondition for bracha. There cannot be bracha without that. Shalom. Shalom is the essence of the kelim of bracha. Without shalom, there cannot be bracha. And shalom means a consideration of another person. Shalom means that when you sit at the table, the person who's sitting next to you, that isn't made to feel ill. Shalom means that if there's a certain style of dress, one conforms to that unless it goes against the essence of one's own beliefs. There's nothing wrong with it. One conforms to it. That's how they dress in this part of the world. That's how one dresses. It shows a respect to other people. An ability to fit in. An ability to interrelate. That's shalom. If one turns and looks at a person and says, ah, look at him. Doesn't fit in here. Doesn't know how to behave himself. There's no showing. It can't be broken without just a formality. Good, just a formality. Derech Eretz is also just a formality. But it's the fundamental of Torah. Out of that, Torah grows. And in fact, Elisha emphasizes that when he tells her to go and get kelim. What is the word that he uses? A word which appears to be redundant, but now we understand it. He could say merely, go and borrow kelim. Lechi shali loch kelim meis kol shchenayich. He could say, go and borrow kelim from all your neighbors. That's all he has to say. What does he say? Lechi shali loch kelim min hachutz. Go and get kelim from outside. It doesn't matter where the kelim come from. You can borrow kelim from the goyim as well. It doesn't matter where you get it from. It doesn't matter what it is. The kli is just a formality, but it needs to be there. You can't say it's just a formality, therefore it doesn't need to be there. It's true it's minachutz, but that doesn't matter. It needs to be there. Unless that is there, there cannot be shalom. And unless there's shalom, there cannot be bracha. Now the whole Torah functions in this way. If we take the Torah, if we take Jewish life, the Torah is made up of the Chochmas HaTorah, the knowledge of Torah, the depths of Torah, the understanding of Torah, the philosophy of Torah, the ethics of Torah. That's all the essence of it. And then there's the Maisa HaMitzvahs, the external things in Torah. The mitzvahs that we have to do. Gotta keep kashas, gotta keep Shabbos, gotta wear tzitzis, gotta put on tefillin, gotta write a sefer Torah, gotta put on mezuzahs. That's all the external actions, the most external manifestation of Torah. Now what would you imagine if we were going to give an example of the Torah as a tree? And we were to say that the branches represented one of these two parts and the roots represented another one of these two parts. I would expect the roots to be the essence, the philosophy of Torah, the ethics of Torah, the essence of Torah, and the branches to be the external manifestation of Torah, the mitzvahs of Torah. So if we were to use an image of a tree to picture Torah, I would expect the roots to be the essence, the Chochmas HaTorah, and the branches to be the Maaseh HaMitzvahs. But at the end of the fourth perek of Pirkei Avos, end of the third perek of Pirkei Avos, we have a maimer of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah who says, this is the same Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah who, by the way, has just said, Imein Torah in derech eretz, Imein derech eretz ein Torah. He now says, Kol shechochmosoi merube mimasov. A person whose longus, whose wisdom, exceeds his deeds, l'mahu doimi, what can he be compared to? L'ilon, to a tree, she'anofov merubim v'shoroshov muotim. Who has many branches and little roots. And the wind can come, he's an unstable person. He can be uprooted and thrown onto his face, no matter how wise he is. But anybody whose deeds are more than his wisdom, what is he like? Like a tree whose branches are few, and his roots are many. All the winds in the world can't move him aside. So what does the Mishnah say here? Exactly the opposite of what we would expect. The roots are the maisim, are the deeds, and the branches is the wisdom. What's important here is which draws on which. The branches draw on the roots. The roots supply the nourishment. You see what we're coming up with. But it's the form that supplies the nourishment to the essence. It's not just that you need a kli, as we said, it's not just that you need a utensil, otherwise it can't be contained. It can't survive without a utensil. The very essence will die. If the seed hasn't got earth in which to be planted, the seed will decay. It's not that it won't produce, it will in fact deteriorate. The need of a kli, when you have a dynamic seed which can regenerate, which has the potential to generate, and it needs a kli, it needs an atmosphere in which to generate. If you deny it that atmosphere in which to generate, what happens? It ceases to exist. It draws from its atmosphere. It draws from its kli. The kli, in fact, nourishes the essence. That's the relationship that we have here. It's not just that a man needs a woman in order to have children because he needs somebody to whom to give his seed. No, much more than that. If he doesn't have that, he becomes sterile. He becomes totally unproductive. That's what happens. The same as a person who has more wisdom than deeds, that's like more branches than roots. It is the deeds that nourish the human being, not the wisdom. That explains a lot. How often do we hear people complaining about persons, a big Talmud Chacham, all very nice, but look how he behaves. If that's what Yiddishkeit is, I want nothing of it. That's not what Yiddishkeit is. Not at all. That's exactly what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is talking about. Yiddishkeit is that the deeds exceed the wisdom. That we do more than we understand. That we do greater things than we're able to perceive, than we're able to conceive. Among the goyim produce great works of wisdom. Great works of art, great works of literature. But almost without exception, the works they produce are greater than the people they are. With us it's different. In Torah, great works are produced as well. The Gedolei Yisrael have written and produced the most gigantic of works. But they were even greater. When you meet the author of a sefer, When you come face to face with the Gogol himself, you're bowled over. That you never expected. That greatness you never expected. Even though you've read his work. When you meet the author of a secular work, you say, how did he get to that? This little guy. How did he figure it all out? Where did it come to him from? Amazed. There's disappointment. There's almost disillusionment. Torah requires more beneath the surface than above the surface. And what's beneath the surface is the deeds. What's beneath the surface is the midos. What's beneath the surface is the kindness, the tzedakah, the understanding, the mitzvahs. That's what's beneath the surface. That's what nourishes the human being. Take that away and the branches wilt. Doesn't matter what the chokhmah is. The chokhmah becomes sterile if there aren't the deeds to nourish it. So we see that even within the human being, there is the male and female. There is the deeds, and there is the wisdom. The deeds feed into the wisdom. And backwards and forwards it goes. But the initiator is the deeds. We develop richness in life from what we do, not from what we think. What we think is enriched. What we think grows and develops, and new ideas are produced, provided our lives are active. Provided we're interrelating with people. Provided we're doing chesed, we're doing mitzvahs. There's some kind of cross-fertilization, as we've discussed. There's got to be fertilization for there to be intellectual productivity. Then the deeds nourish the mind. The deed nourishes the heart and the soul. And then when you sit down to learn, one is able to learn with freshness and with creativity and with regeneration, and new ideas are able to be developed. Remember, we spoke about it a couple of years ago, I think, the lovely Medrash that Hashem tells Moshe to build the Mishkan. What does he tell him to build first? First to build the Klei HaMishkan, the various utensils, and then to build the Mishkan. When Bezalel comes to do it, he does it the other way around. He starts with the Mishkan, with the house itself, and then he puts in the Kelim afterwards. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, but that's not what we were told. We were told to first build the Kelim and then to build the house. Says Bezalel, that's illogical. Can't be. That can't be what Hashem said. He must have said or meant that we must do the Kelim, because that's how one does one. First build the house and then you put furniture in. You don't first put the furniture and then build the house. What do we see here again? The Birucham again makes this point. What do we see? First comes the external. Then comes the internal. It's true you need the essence. It's true you've got to have something which can multiply. But before you put it there, you need to have a hospitable environment for it. Once you've got the hospitable environment, then you can put the essence inside, and the essence can grow and can flourish and can regenerate and repopulate itself and do all sorts of wonderful things. But there has to be the environment. First the bayis, then you put in the essence. When the guy comes to Hillel, what does he say? Teach me the whole Torah standing on one leg. What does he want to know? He wants to know the essence. What is the essence of it all? What does Hillel tell him? He could have answered him so beautifully. Ve'ahavto l'reicha kamecha. That's the essence of it. The essence, as Lahavdil Elef Avdolos, the Christians have said, that's the essence of religion. But he didn't. Love, he could have spoken about love, he could have been the first person to exalt love onto the levels which it reached in the 1960s. Love, everything. If there's love, there's everything. If there's love, that's all you need. Love, love, love. After Lerecha Kamechon, and everything else is alright. He doesn't. He gives an external formula, a formality. Action. What you don't like, don't do to others. A dry instruction, not a philosophy. The ahavta l'reicha kamecha is an emotion. It's a philosophy. Hillel doesn't give him that. That's not the essence of Torah. The essence of Torah is a formality. The essence of Torah is don't do to others what you don't want done to yourself. That's the key. Once you've got the key, you'll put essence into it. You start understanding that the essence is the ahavta l'reicha kamecha. The essence is love your neighbor as yourself, but start with the formula and then come to the essence, not the other way around. Every other religion and every other philosophy starts with the essence and tries to make kelim to fit. We start with kelim. We start with utensils. Clearly defined halachic utensils. Mishechonechrov beis hamikdosh, enlo laKadosh Baruch Hu elo dalad amish halacha bilvad. All the Rebbeinu Shlom cares about is the defined four amos of halacha. That's the utensil, that's the kli. If that's there, we'll fill it already. We'll put the essence in and there'll be brocha. But if the kli isn't there, if the utensil isn't there, there cannot be brocha. There cannot be the regeneration of new ideas. There cannot be the regeneration of new feelings. I need to go forward another 15 minutes or so, but perhaps we should take a very brief break here and ask if there's any questions that anybody wants clarified at this point before I finish the rest of the concept. Anybody want to ask anything at this point? Yes. To what extent does a Jew conform? Conform to what? To non-Jewish norms. Okay, that's a very important point that needs to be understood. A Jew conforms in as much as he's able to do so without compromising his essence. You can't have a utensil which detracts from the essence. You can only have a utensil which enhances the essence. And so if our society requires of us to do things which are against our essence, we cannot do that. If our society requires of us to do something which is essentially non-Jewish, we can't do that. That we can't do. But to do things which is just common courtesy and it doesn't make any difference to us at all, that we have to do. There we have to conform. The Gemara that I quoted to you from Masechet Uktzin, when the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to give the Torah, he could find no kli capable of holding brocha other than Sholem. What's that going to do with giving the Torah? That's a statement we have in our Medrash as well. When the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to give there is no kli able to hold brocha other than Sholem. We know that. What did Chazal tell us when they say that when the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to give Torah, he could find no kli to hold brocha other than Sholem, which means that he needed Sholem before the Torah could be given. Which implies that once the Torah is given, there's going to be an awful lot of brocha. As we know, in fact, the Torah is full of it. If you will keep the Torah, there will be brocha. But what is the relationship between this need for a kli of Sholem, the utensil of Sholem needs to be there, on the one hand, and the giving of the Torah on the other hand? Now also in our parasha, there's a beautiful medrash, which works on a posuk in Koheles, that compares divrei Torah, the words of Torah, uchemasmeros mutuim, like nails which are planted. A very interesting image. A nail planted. And the Medrash analyzes this image. The hardness of a nail with the subtlety of a plant. The ability to easily pull out a nail. The transferability of a nail with the durability or with the sturdiness of a plant which is enrooted. So the Medrash goes through. One of the things the Medrash says is the following. Ma masme ze chose v'lo yosi. I might think if Torah was only compared to a nail, I might think that it's like a nail in as much as a nail deteriorates. You knock a nail into a wall and you leave it there year after year after year. What happens? It starts getting rusty, it starts corroding. Eventually it deteriorates. The Medrash says an interesting thing. Choser v'lo yosu. It gets less, not more. It corrodes. And you won't come there and find a bigger nail after a while, or find two nails. No brocha. But it's interesting, you see already here, where there's no brocha, there's deterioration. It doesn't just say, well, a nail doesn't get any bigger. No, says the Medrash. This nail deteriorates and doesn't improve. If there isn't improvement, if there isn't brocha, there is deterioration automatically. You can't have a static state. After the Torah chasirin v'lo yaseim, I might think the Torah also becomes less as a person grows older and develops. One might think he starts forgetting, his mind isn't quite as sharp. One might think his Torah starts deteriorating. Talmud lo yimen nituim. That's why we're told, no, it's like a nail only in the sense of its firmness, but it's a plant. Manatiyazu poro verova. Just as a plant. And what does the Medrash use? Pruruvu. Our phrase from 2 weeks ago. Brocha, the essence of brocha. Just as Torah multiplies and is fruitful, produces new ideas and new thoughts and generates new concepts, avdivrei Torah porim v'rovim, that's how Torah is, just like a plant. New plants grow, new plants develop, little plantlings, little saplings develop, so it is with Torah. As a man grows and develops, so his ideas grow and his thought process grows and his concepts grow and new ideas are developed, and on it goes with a brocha of puruvu. So we see inherent in Torah is the need for creativity, the need for generation, the need for new ideas. But for that there needs to be sholem. Why? Ba'alei ha-sufis, eilu tamidei chachomim sheyoshvin ha-sufis af-sufis. The pasuk there in Koheles goes on to talk about ba'alei ha-sufis, people who gathered together, This means the Talmidei Chachomim, says the Medrash, who gather together v'oiskin b'Torah and they discussing Torah. Now, what happens when you get a few Talmidei Chachomim together discussing Torah? Halalu metamim v'halalu metarim. Some say kosher, some say trei. Halalu oisim v'halalu matirim. Some say osu, some say mutter. It started with then already. It's nothing new. Halalu poslim v'halalu machshirim. This one says posel. This one says it's in order. There are different views. If you're going to have creative thought, you're going to have diversity. You're going to have divergence of opinion. And we're being taught nowadays, and this is one of the big dangers that we're facing in the Torah world, to fear diversity of opinion. To fear the richness of divergent views. That's a natural consequence of bracha. If there's only one view being produced over and over again, that's sterility, that's klala, that's curse, that's deterioration. Within the very framework of authentic reasoning, there has to be authentic, there has to be originality, there has to be creativity. There has to be chidush. Shema yomer odom hoyu ba'alalu metamim ba'alalu metarim ba'alalu isrim ba'alalu matirim ha'alalu poslim ba'alalu machshirim. A Talmid might then say, I'm confused. This says kosher, this one says trei, this one says mutter, this one says osur. I don't know where I stand anymore. Heichan ilayim etero. How can I learn Torah anymore? This is far too confusing. Doesn't it all sound familiar? Could have been written for the 1980s. Talmud Leumar comes to teach us, Nisnu Miroya Echod. This has all been given to us by one shepherd. Me Keil Echod Nisonom. One God gave it to us. Parnos Echod Omorum Mipi Odin Kula Masim. One Gabet gave it all to us from one master of all deeds. Shneemar vayedaber Elokim es kol advarim ha'ile. All these words of Torah, every bit of it, Hashem spoke Himself. Apato you too, asay oznecho ka'afar cheses. Make your ear like a funnel. Uknei lecho lev shemea es divrei ha'metanim, es divrei ha'metarim, es divrei ha'isim, es divrei ha'matirim, es divrei ha'poslim, es divrei ha'machshirim. And acquire yourself an understanding heart, a deep intellect that can absorb these divergent views, and that can trace them down to their essential principles and find that at the bottom of it all there's a unity. That's all one in principle. To be able to understand where the divergency emanates from, to understand where the differences come from. If you're able to acquire for yourself a lev mevin, a deep understanding heart, you'll understand them at their essence. You won't have to worry about the confusion. If you're going to look at it superficially, which is the disease of current day learning of Torah throughout the world, superficiality, just cover as much ground as you can, you're going to get confused. Of course you will. This one says kosher, this one says trei, this one says mutter, this one says osur, and you don't know what it's all about. Until you take the view that says trei from the view that says kosher, and you analyze each of them, and you realize that they're all working on one principle, the principle given to us by the Ribbono Shel Olam at Sinai. And there's each one has used his own creative ability to project that principle into a current situation. And using his own creativity, he's reached a different conclusion. Baruch Hashem that he has. That shows that he's creative. That shows that he's original. That shows that he's alive and dynamic, that he's being fruitful and multiplying. That's part of the bracha of Torah. Provided there's shalom. If there's shalom, then diversity brings richness. If there's shalom, then diversity brings blessing, diversity brings happiness, diversity brings wealth. If there's not, if there isn't the ability to appreciate creative productivity, the need for it, and the value of it, then there's going to be tsarusayim, and we're going to be at each other's throats. The ones who say kosher are going to resent the ones who say treif, the ones that say posel are going to resent the ones that say toru. We're going to tear ourselves apart. And so says the Ribbono Shel Olam, if there's going to be creativity in the learning of Torah, there has to be sholem. Because creativity, chidush, is brocha. And for brocha there needs to be sholem. Perhaps it's easy to understand now why in our generation we're facing these two machalos, these two illnesses. Superficiality, dryness, uncreativeness, and machlekes. The two go together. Because where there isn't sholem, there cannot be creativity. There needs to be an atmosphere conducive to generation. There needs to be an atmosphere conducive to growth, to development, to bracha, to blessing. And what does Chazal tell us is that atmosphere? Shalom. If there's no shalom, shalom means the correct dynamics between the male and female elements of society, the male and female elements of personality, of a community. if there isn't the correct interrelationship resulting in shalom, then there is an atmosphere hostile to development, hostile to creativity, hostile to the generation of new ideas and new concepts, hostile to the principle of peru revu, to the brocha, to the blessing of being fruitful and multiplying. There has to be stagnancy and sterility where there is not shalom. And where there is development and fruitfulness and creative thinking, there has to be shalom. It's true that a great deal of the kelim are form only. Victorian derech eretz, non-Jewish derech eretz, it's only form. It lacks the content. It's meaningless. Yet, in many cases, regrettably, among frum people, here and elsewhere, there's a lot of content. The Torah is there, the Yiddish Shemaim is there, the frumkeit is there, but the form is lacking. Just the ability to know how to get on with one another. Since I've spoken, by the way, in the community about raising the children with derech eretz, it's become a pleasure. I just hope in Mirat Hashem it keeps that way and it develops that way. Firstly, the davening is much better. You see the children in shul, you see them davening, the children's faces already look different. And I've gotten to know the children a little bit. They come and say good Shabbos all of a sudden. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to see them. It's a pleasure to relate to them. A bit of derech eretz. But very often one finds, among frum people, as we said, a desire to put aside all the goyish formalities. And you land up with content without form. And both are bad. Just as form without content is goyish, so content without form is schleppish and terrible. It's there can't be brocha. The content and the content eventually deteriorates. The content eventually disintegrates. That's what happens if there isn't a kli. It's true that that is only form. It's true that politeness is only form. It's true that table manners is only form. It's true that a correct mode of dress is only form. But that form creates an environment which allows brocha to flourish, which allows the interrelationships to operate the way they need to be. And why we have to realize that the goyim have got it in a very superficial sense, that the derech eretz that they develop is only form. On the other hand, we must realize that doesn't pass it, that doesn't make it no good. It's kelim min achutz. It's vessels from outside, but that doesn't matter. The vessels can be used and they can be filled with Torah and with Yerushalayim and then they can be brocha. One needs to understand these principles in learning. As we've already gone through, there's in learning there needs to be the formalities. One needs to know how to learn. There's a formality in learning. One needs to know the techniques of studying. One needs to know the techniques of analysis. One needs to know the techniques of lomdus. One needs to have material. One needs to know, one has to be able to read and translate, one has to have material, one has to have covered a certain amount of ground. That's the form, you need that. And that has to come first. But into that there needs to be injected the essence. The ethics, the philosophy, the underlying principle of the halacha. The roots, following it down, these say kosher, these say treif, that's not enough to know. You've got to go down to the root of it and find the essence. And the two together, when you have the kelim, when you have the means, the skills of learning, together with the input of the ideas of learning, that together creates the dynamics of a Torah society. That's why in this Beis HaMedrash I've always insisted from the time we started, two streams going simultaneously. The learning of Gemara, the development of skills, and the Musar and Hashkofa, which has to take place at the same time. Whether it's the Sunday morning shir, or the Friday night shir, or this Motzei Shabbos shir, there needs to be an understanding of the essential properties of the principles of Torah, so that the kli can be filled with the essence, and that you can establish brocha, that there can be an interrelationship between essence and between utensil. And equally important, it needs to exist socially. And with this I would like to conclude the role of a social environment. A society is also a kli. It's all very well for the person to say, I don't need a society. I'm an independent person. That's fine. One can be an independent person and one can, so to say, survive as an independent person for a period of time. But there has to be deterioration because the society is the kli. You can be the seed, but unless you're planted in a hospitable environment, no tree is ever going to grow. And if the seed doesn't grow into a tree, the seed begins to decay. The society that one chooses for oneself is the kli. And it's in this image of this kli and essence that one can appreciate the role of the kli most of all. What does the society do? The society exerts pressure. The society establishes certain standards and makes demands. A society which does not make demands is not a society worth belonging to. It's as simple as that. You remember old Groucho Marx, when he was applied to join some club or other, and they wrote back accepting him gladly. He wrote back and said, if you're prepared to accept me, I'm not particularly interested in joining. A society that is prepared to take you as you are. People value that very much. You know what it is? You'll say to a person, why do you go to such and such a shul? You know, they'll say to you, you know why? I'll tell you why. Because they accept me as I am. They know me, they understand me, and they place no demands on me. And I say, Oive. Another loss. Another human being who's never going to grow into anything. He values it still. He likes it. A society that doesn't demand. A society that places no demands on an individual. That lets him do what he wants. That's not a kli. That's hefker. That's a seed which is not planted. The earth demands from the plant. It has to crack it open and draw its goodness out of it and bring it and push it up to the surface. And there the sun starts pulling it up. It's an environment which demands, and there's wind, there's sun, there's cold, there's heat. But that's what keeps the plant going. Put the plant into a really cotton wool kind of environment where it has no sun and it has no darkness and it has no summer, no winter, no water, no nothing. Just accept it as it is. You don't have to change. Just be as you are. Try it. Go to the nursery, get a nice beautiful plant and create for it an environment which accepts it as it is and makes no demands on it. What happens? How long do you give the plant? What happens to a human being who's not put into a situation of challenge? We know it in every area. Would you send your children to a school where the school says, you know, our philosophy is we accept the children as they are. We demand nothing from them. They want to come, they come. They don't want to come, they don't come. They want to write exams, they can write. They want to attend lessons, they can attend lessons. We place no demands on them. We believe the children will just grow by themselves. You just have to create an environment where they can feel free to grow. And people sometimes, there has been such a shit in education, as you know, and people went for it for a while until they saw the results. Maladjusted individuals, totally incapable of doing anything with themselves. Growth stunted and stifled. For a period, there's dynamic growth for a period. It's very interesting because it's different. But all of a sudden you realize that it's different because it's a monster. A monster is also different, but nobody wants it for their own child. Very interesting, you're a museum specimen. But not in your own family. We wouldn't like that. We wouldn't want to put our children in an educational environment that demands nothing. Would we like a job that demands nothing? Go to a job, how would you feel? Go to a job, interview, and they say, right, we're prepared to pay you 10,000 rand a month. Sorry, we can't up that. That's all we can pay you. So, 10,000, what do you need from me? Nothing. Nothing. We don't need anything. We're prepared to take you as you are, come as you like, go as you like, do what you want. How long would you survive that without losing your dignity, without losing your creative drive, without losing your ambition? How long would you survive that? We don't like, superficially we don't like demands being made of us. Superficially we kick and we shout and we scream and we object. But try the other route. Try having no demands made on us. And then what do we feel like? We cease growing immediately. And a community is no different. When a person chooses for himself a society in which to operate, a community in which to operate, he has to choose a community and a society that makes demands. The demands mustn't be so high that he cannot reach them. One cannot have a kli which is totally out of proportion. There needs to be shalom. There needs to be interrelationship. The community needs to make demands, and one needs to be able to respond to those demands, and the community needs to recognize that response and to encourage it. Otherwise you've got sterility again. If you find yourself in a community where you're making, the community is demanding, you're making, the community just demands more and more and more and more and more, and there's no feedback, you don't get any kind of recognition, you don't get any kind of acknowledgement, also there'll be sterility, you'll stop growing. That also can't be. You cannot have an environment which is so hostile that it doesn't respond to your input at all. One has to choose a community that gives one just that balance. A community that makes a demand and responds to a demand and responds to a giving and enables me to give and demands still more. And so the growth is able to be developed. That's what a community is. That's what a school is. That's what a yeshiva is. That's what a community is. That's what a rov expects from his talmidim. That's what his talmidim expect from a rov. Nobody wants a rebbe who doesn't make demands. And no rebbe wants students who don't make demands. Couldn't care, give whatever kind of shoe you like. Doesn't matter what standard it is. You can tell us the biggest lot of drivel and we'll still keep coming. And it makes no difference. We don't demand anything from you. What kind of growth would there be for such a teacher? That's the Dukhra Nukva that there has to be all the time. For there to be Brocha, there has to be an environment. The environment places the demands, and the essence responds to that demand. The essence then becomes the environment, and the environment becomes the essence, backwards and forwards. One demanding, one responding, the other acknowledging that response, and demanding more again. And so growth develops and develops. In the old days, this was almost guaranteed, because people didn't move around so much. A Yid used to live in Kovna, a Yid used to live in Telz, a Yid used to live in Slabodka, that's where he lived. There was one rov of the town. There might have been a couple of shuls, but they were all under the one rov, one system. There's one yeshiva in the town where you sent your children, and you might have sent your children to the town next door, and that's where the child stayed for his whole Torah experience virtually. That's where he learned, that's where he lived. But today, when populations have gathered together and things are a little bit different, the tendency is either to find a place which makes no demands, which is suicide, or there's one thing which is even worse than that. And that is to escape demands by remaining a perpetual tourist. And I've mentioned this before. A tourist has a wonderful time. Tourists come back from Russia. What do they say? People who go as tourists, not to work there among the Yidden, as tourists. What a wonderful place. The museums, the art, the literature, the music, the scenery. What a place. Very impressed. A tourist is happy anywhere in the world. They take tours now where? To the North Pole. They take tourists to the South Pole, they take tourists to Alaska. But you ask the tourist afterwards whether he would feel like emigrating to Russia or to Alaska or to the North Pole. Of course not. A tourist feels comfortable anywhere because nobody makes any demands of the tourist. What do you do when a tourist comes? You roll out the red carpet, Shalom Aleichem. Come, make yourself comfortable, stay as long as you want, then you go and he feels good. If he stays too long, then you start taking him a little for granted and you start to... You know, when you're cleaning up after the shalashudas, you hand him a plate to take to the kitchen. Then he realizes it's time to go into the next place. And he goes to the next place, and he's right to the tourist. Out comes the red carpet, and Shalom Aleichem, we're so happy to see you. Come, we make no demands on you. Come when you want, go when you want, until demands are made on him there, and invited, he goes on. Again, he becomes a tourist somewhere else. He remains a perpetual tourist through Jewish life. Never contributing, never requiring anything of himself, never being required of anything from others. And he feels good until he notices the deterioration, the sterility, the loss of energy, the loss of creative ability, the fact that nothing is really developing and that there's no brocha in his Yiddishkeit, there's no dynamicism in his Yiddishkeit. For there to be brocha and dynamicism, you need to take the seed, you need to find the correct place for that seed. Plant the seed in the earth. Subjected to the extremes of that environment, through the summer and the winter, the spring and the autumn, water it and dry it, give it light and give it darkness, nurture it and develop it, and slowly that seed begins to break open, it begins to germinate, it begins to sprout, and it begins to grow into a dynamic person capable of regenerating others like itself.